care of them all the time, Lord. No, there's no let up, Lord. I don't care how old they get.
And how long have you been taking care of them, Sam?
Way too long.
Not near long enough.
Not near long enough.
That's
obviously.
Right.
Obviously. Or I'm not teaching them nothing.
Okay, we got it to you at 9 minutes after.
All right.
We're working hard at it, Scott.
It's been great.
Please don't mess with Fred.
Freestanding recording electronic device.
Do you need some order?
I don't know. Do we need any more of the outlines? Does everybody have an outline? I guess we need some more made, Sam, if you'll make some more. Thank you. So, yeah. Hey, that's a good problem. We need more outlines. I will second what Don shared with you earlier. This class has been well attended, and I credit you for your hunger, your thirsting for righteousness, and to know God's Word. And I appreciate you being here and coming out. As Don said, you know, especially, well, here we are smack dab in the middle of the holiday season, and it's easy just to stay at home and hang out at the house. And you chose to be here tonight. You chose to be here tonight. And you remember from the very beginning our twofold purpose of this is obviously to educate ourselves and to take what God has given us and to evangelize. Educate, evangelize. That's what it's all about, folks. Right there. Learning from the Lord and telling others about the Lord. Okay? And I appreciate you so much. I appreciate Mike Wagner filling in for me on Sunday and the wonderful lesson that he presented tonight. It's been just a blessing to watch Mike, to watch all of our young men just mature and grow in their faith and their knowledge of God's Word. And I knew Sunday when he preached Sunday morning that everything was in good hands. In my understanding, David Martin did the same thing Sunday evening. And I know David's a great qualified sound speaker as well. Knows the Scriptures. For the past few weeks, we have been studying the eternal plan. God's eternal plan. The following chart kind of shows what we've been going through with regards to the eternal plan. And I'm really encouraging you to create your own chart, to follow this chart well. When we look at this, one of the very operative passages that when we talk about God's eternal plan is 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 20. What does 1 Peter chapter 1 verse 20 say? What is it? Someone can read it even. 1 Peter 1, 20. What's it about?
God's eternal plan.
It's about God's eternal plan. All right. What's it say? He indeed was foreordained before the foundation of the world. Who's he?
Jesus
was, right? Jesus was foreordained before the foundation of the world. Okay, and these last times, he's been revealed unto you. And then that passage is smack dab in the middle of a topic known as redemption. Okay, what does it mean to redeem?
Buy back.
Meaning that something that was previously there is gone and needs to be purchased, bought back. I read an article years ago about a little boy who lost his sailboat, little toy sailboat, along the riverbank. And And he was all upset about it. And his daddy says, you know, we'll do the best we can, son, to get it back, but there's no guarantees. And they would go down the riverbank and start stopping at people's homes and asking them, you know, did you, and sure enough, there was another little boy that had found that sailboat, a family found that little boy's sailboat, and the dad says, how much will it cost for me to buy that boat back? Okay? And that's what redemption is. We're buying it back. Okay? God purchased us back. So if you need one of these outlines, go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll make sure that you get one. Okay? So in Genesis, chapter 1 through 5, you see the chart here. We see creation and we see judgment. All right? None of us are getting out of here alive, folks. Okay? We have a beginning and we have an expiration date. Okay? With that being said, and God's eternal plan in place, Genesis 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, we see a God of order, a God of structure. Okay? What happens in Genesis in chapter 3? After man, God creates man and woman, what happens in Genesis chapter 3? Sin enters into the world, doesn't it? Okay? Sin enters into the world. Man and woman sin. Okay? Now, when we're discussing this with regards to sin, and we're talking about God's eternal plan, it is God's plan to save man, right? God's plan to save man. When we're talking about God's plan to save man, that means sin has entered into the picture. John tells us in 1 John in chapter 1 and verse 5 that God is light and him what? There is no darkness at all, is there? So God can't reside where sin resides. Okay? Romans in chapter 3, verse 23. Paul said we have all what?
Sinned and fallen short.
And fallen short of the glory of God. Isaiah the prophet in Isaiah chapter 59, verse 2. What does Isaiah, what does God say to us through the prophet Isaiah in verse 2? Your transgressions, your iniquities have what?
Separated
you from God. God's got to have a plan to bring us back. Okay? That's what this class is about. So then we divided this up into periods. We'll discuss that in just a moment. But as we're looking at this chart, so how is God going to do this? We come over to Genesis in chapter 6. God had a plan in place. There was a man, a very special man that God used to help bring about this plan. What's his name?
Noah.
Why would God choose Noah?
Because he was righteous.
He just liked his name, right?
He was righteous.
He was righteous. He walked with God, the scriptures say. As a matter of fact, you go over to Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 7. Noah was a man of
faith.
He was a man of faith. He took God at his word. Okay? Those are the people that God uses. Okay? People who walk with God. People who build their lives and build a trust and obey God. Okay? So that's what we see with Noah. God is using Noah. Now, you remember, we've been looking at these various periods, and we've been looking at God's plan to save man, where God kind of reveals through all of these segments of history where he's like, I'm reminding you of my plan. One of them, a messianic prophecy in Genesis in chapter 3, verse 15. Remember what that was in Genesis 3:15? God pronounced his curse upon the devil. You remember what he told him? He says, you're indeed going to bruise his heel. But in turn, he's going to what? He's going to crush your head. Okay? Now, how did that happen? Who can explain that to me? In what way did Satan bruise the heel of Jesus? The crucifixion. Okay? The crucifixion. But, Archie, in what way did the Lord crush his head? Okay? Yeah, raising from that grave. And now we have hope through that resurrection. Right? That's exactly right. Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, that is our first messianic prophecy. That is God, that is the Holy Spirit, by divine inspiration, saying, yoo-hoo, look over here. I'm reminding you of this plan to save you. Okay? How about Noah's generation? Here's Noah. God uses Noah. He builds what I call the first love boat. Okay? And he follows God word for word on everything God wanted. How he wanted that built, that boat built, the dimensions, everything that goes on it, Noah followed it to a T. You know, that's what, listen to me, folks, that's real faith and belief and trust in God, taking God at every word and obeying every word and not taking the liberty with his word and say, I think he'll be good with this. I think God will be okay with that. I'm going to tell you, if Noah would have started that stuff, we would have been reading the story about the Titanic, the first Titanic scene. Okay. But that's not what we read. Okay, we see a man of great faith. So, what is it that we see? Now, remember, it can be a Bible passage. It can be an image, something that represents, you know, an image with regards to Christ coming. What is it that we see with regards to Noah's generation and God revealing to us that he's going to redeem us? Any thoughts? Okay, the rainbow. We talked about the rainbow, didn't we? God's covenant with man. And by the way, you can have more than one. I think when we look at this, when we look at this Egyptian bondage, the oppression, there's actually, I want to share with you a couple passages that I think God kind of shares with us and shows us, you know, it's not just one where God shows us, hey, look, I got a covenant with you. Okay, and I remember my promises. Okay. But you remember we were talking about how God was using Noah, and God, we kind of looked at this ark as the kingdom, the church, okay? You know, we are baptized into Christ, we are placed in Christ, okay? But when we're looking at God using Noah in this ship, go back over to 1 Peter chapter 3, okay? We see in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 20 and 21, right? Baptism doth save us, right? Okay? Now, I remember many years ago driving down the road, almost drove off the road, listening to a denominational preacher say, this passage has nothing to do with baptism. I thought, man, my Bible has baptism totally discussed in this passage so much to the point I've got to wring the pages out because they're so wet. Okay? It's all about baptism. Okay? But you see this image of God using Noah, okay, and using the water and using this boat, if you would, this water-bearing vessel to bear his family to safety. Okay? Folks, listen to me. Who's the Lord coming back to take home? Who is the Lord coming back to take home?
Church.
He's coming back to take home the faithful church. Right? I got to throw that in there. All right, because that's the way it reads, right? Right, you know. So anyway, so that's the image, okay? And again, as Jeff mentioned, you know, we certainly look at the rainbow, and you know, we look at God's covenant with man, okay? Then we move on and we look at Abraham, and that's who we discussed last week with regards to the patriarchal period, Genesis in chapter 12, verses 1-4. What do we see in Genesis 12, verses 1 through 4? What did God promise? What did God tell Abraham? Okay.
To
go ahead.
To leave his country.
What's that?
To leave his country.
Okay, there was a lot he was giving up, wasn't there, Don?
Yeah.
Okay, he was forsaking a lot. He was leaving his country. Right. He was leaving his father. Okay, there was a lot. And Lloyd, you're right, was the fact that through him, through his seed, all the earth, all the nations will be blessed. There were a couple passages we looked at last week. And you went over and you start looking in Galatians in chapter 3. And we had talked about that as well with regards to all nations being blessed. And Paul talked about that. And that seed actually is not seeds, but Paul is very specific. It was around Galatians 3:15. That seed is Jesus Christ. There's your messianic prophecy. God was still yet working his plan through these patriarchs, okay? And when we talk about the patriarchal period, they're actually, when we talk about periods, biblical time periods here, the antediluvian period, post-diluvian period, the patriarchal period. Again, patriarch. What's a patriarch?
Father.
Okay. Leader of a clan, leader of a tribe, leader of a family. Okay. And the ones specifically that we looked at were Abraham. Who else? Isaac. Who else?
Jacob.
And who else? Who did we finish with?
Joseph.
Okay. And Joseph. We talked about Joseph, didn't we? That's the way we finished. Well, we'll discuss that in just a little bit. But here, guys, here are your biblical periods of time as they're broken down. And I guarantee you, in these periods of time, as we're looking at these, God is, again, always reminding us, I'm going to save man. Okay? any questions, comments, grunts, groans, or complaints up to this point? Hearing none. Okay. We're going to move on. So when we reflect on Abraham and the patriarchs, we're talking about the male leaders of the tribes, the clans, the families. And those were the leaders that we looked at last week. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And as we saw, God worked through these men to preserve his eternal plan. As a matter of fact, God revealed his plan to us, as we talked about there in Genesis in chapter 12, verses 1 through 4. And it was reaffirmed and confirmed in Galatians 3. 5 through 9 in Galatians 3, 15 through 16. Let's move on to the biblical period known as the period of the Egyptian bondage. Okay, let's go through this real quick. It's from the descent into Egypt to the Exodus. Remember, last week we ended with what Bible character?
Joseph.
That's who we talked about. Okay, we'll discuss that in just a little bit. Covers a period of Genesis 42 through Exodus chapter 11. Okay? The main points, the descent into Egypt, Genesis 42 through 50:26, the oppression in Egypt. Okay? Exodus in chapter 1 and verses 1 through 22. Moses, the deliverer, Exodus chapter 2. Moses and Aaron, Exodus 3 through Exodus chapter 6, verse 12. And then we see the 10 plagues in Exodus chapter 7. And then we'll finish up in Exodus in chapter 12 in verse 36. So, as we left off last week, discussing Joseph. Man, if you look at Joseph's life, what an amazing story. Okay? But we're just going to look at the tail end, just so we can catch the tail end of that story and make a segue into tonight's lesson. So with regards to Joseph, Joseph is now in Egypt. He is depicted as governor, okay? Second in command. You can even call him vice president if you want to. I don't care. You know, he was very powerful, okay? And we remember Pharaoh had his dreams, those disturbing dreams. You remember his dreams. Okay, we had some cows coming up out of the Nile. We had some grain that didn't look so healthy, and other grain did. Okay, and all that meant what? Well, feast and famine. You know, and we use that terminology today, don't we? It's either feast or famine. Okay, we joke about that all the time. You know, Kathy, my wife, her dad used to be a contractor. And it was either feast or famine, there was a famine that was coming, seven bad years, or seven good years, and then there was a famine that was coming. Seven good years, seven bad years, okay? So, year two rolls around, and who makes their way to Egypt to buy supplies? You remember? Joseph's family, his brothers, right? Okay, they come to Egypt, they're buying supplies. And Joseph recognizes them. Did they recognize him?
No.
They did not, did they?
No way.
Okay? So, the hook in all this is, he realized, you know what? I've got a baby brother at home. What's his name?
Benjamin.
Oh, man, great class. All right. So, you know, here's the thing. You guys are spies, aren't you? Oh, no, honest. We're not spies. Tell you what. one of you is all going to stay here. Now, they didn't speak like they were from Southern Ohio. I'll just tell you that right now. But someone's going to stay here. It was Simeon. Okay, so Simeon had to stay, and you go back and you bring the lad with you. Okay, man, that was tough because they knew Daddy loved Benjamin, and Daddy's heart was broken because, and Daddy reminded them of this because I've already lost one boy to the foolishness of you fellas. Okay, so they go back and they run out of supplies. They got to go back and they bring Benjamin with them. Okay, they bring Benjamin with them. He sets them up, okay? He takes his vessel that he drinks out of. He has his servants to hide it in the knapsack of Benjamin. They make their way down the road, and all of a sudden, the king's, his personal belongings are missing. And they go track them down, and they bring them back. Make a long story short, it was all set up. It was all set up to get Daddy to make his way to Egypt. What a beautiful story. Didn't seem so beautiful at the time, okay? But as it turned out, guys, the tail end of this is we have Jacob making his way with his entire caravan, and it was a large caravan, into Egypt. They would settle in Goshen, okay? Not Goshen, Indiana, or Goshen, Ohio. You know, they would settle in Goshen in Egypt, okay? There they would settle. They would build their lives, okay? Now, let's pick this story up. I want you to understand, before we get out of the book of Genesis. After Jacob neared the end of his life, he would call his sons together and he would bless them. In that blessing, he foretold their futures. And it was at this time, his son Judah was chosen to be one through whom the world would be blessed. Hint, hint. Run over. Someone look at Genesis in chapter 49. Genesis 49. Let's read verses 8 through 10. Go ahead, Don.
Judah, you are he whom your brothers shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, who shall rouse him. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people.
Don't forget that passage that Don just read to you. We're going to come back to that. Okay? Hint, hint. Okay? Remember, messianic prophecy. Okay? God is revealing his plan to mankind. After he blessed his sons, he gave instructions that at his death he'd be taken back to Canaan for burial beside his grandparents, his parents, and his wife Leah at Machpelah. His sons obliged. They did that. Joseph would grow old. He believed that one day his people indeed would return to Canaan. He made his people swear that they would take his bones with them as they returned. That's important. When Joseph died, he instructed his family, make sure that you take my bones back where they belong. Okay, because he believed in God's promise, even during his death. And he died at the age of 110. He was embalmed and he was placed in a coffin in Egypt in Genesis in chapter 50. Verse 26. I want you to consider something with all these individuals that we're discussing. Someone go and look and read Hebrews chapter 11, verses 13 through 16. Hebrews chapter 11, verses 13 through 16. Raise your hand if you got it, and I'll call on you. Archie, go ahead. Hebrews 11, 13 through 16.
By faith Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child, and she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky and multitude, numerable as the sand which is by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the promise. but having seen them afar off, or should of them, embrace them and confess that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland, and truly if they have called to mind the country from which they have come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire better, that is, a heavenly country. Their God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them.
There is a lot of beautiful passages, Archie, that we read. And there's only beautiful passages that you can read with someone who is faithful in the Lord, by the way. A lot of beautiful passages that we can read in the Bible that causes our hearts to rejoice and to have confidence, because we know God is true. He is not a liar. I want you to understand the magnitude. I got to stop here for a second. I want you to understand the magnitude of what the Hebrew author is writing here, okay? That God made promises to these people, although they did not physically see them, but by faith they saw them. You understand what I'm saying? Now, how does that relate? How does that compare to you and myself? How does that compare? Is there any application? Any application at all? I hope you say yes to that. Because I'm going to tell you what. I don't think there's a heaven. I know there's a heaven. I don't think there's a God. I know there's a God. I don't think that I have eternal life. I know I have eternal life. And it's by faith. It is by faith.
You don't think you're saved.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, and what a beautiful passage when we're looking at the faith of these Bible characters, guys. It's that, look, I don't need to see it. I just need to know who said it. And I need to follow the script. I need to live my life in accordance with God's will, because God does not lie. He cannot lie. And at the end of this journey, he's going to give me exactly what he promised. That's it right there. That is exactly what that author is saying. And that is how all these biblical characters, that's why that sheet that you've been filling out is so important. Because by the time you are finished with this, it renews and strengthens your own faith. But when you share it with others, man, there's no way you can miss it. That faith works. And God rewards faith that works. It's in there, too. That's in there, too. Okay? All right. Any questions or comments up to this point? I needed to share that with you, because here's Joseph. You know, although I'm dying in Egypt, I want you to take my bones back there, because God made a promise. That land is ours. Heaven is ours. Okay? That's what we're living for. That's what we're loving for. Okay? All right. Questions or comments? Thoughts?
Comments.
Yes. Go ahead, Mike.
There's so much that you're saying there. If you think about Noah and Abraham, who did they have as a pattern before them for faith? I mean, we have those stories, and that's what Hebrews 11 is telling us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of how much we rely on that and we lean on that. But, you know, who did they have in their day? I don't know. I don't know the what or have the answer to that. Mm-hmm. I think a couple things. I think of Romans 1:20, and it says, you know, God's creation kind of tells, it screams of who he is, all his attributes. You know, maybe it was that they looked at, and they seen how massive and how things kind of came together. But, you know, even the apostles in Luke 11:17, and the apostles said to the Lord, increase our faith.
Mm-hmm.
So those are men that walked with him, that seen what he did, and they were calling out.
That's an excellent point, Mike.
Increase our faith.
Exactly.
We've got to have that same. I don't think we ever get there. I mean, we have to continue. Yes, we have this assurance. But I think our faith is something that is just a constant.
When you're talking about those characters, think, and specifically about Noah, his daddy was involved in idol worship. Go back and look at T-Raw, okay? So when you're talking about examples, you know, here's a daddy.
You said Noah, you mean Abraham.
Yes, Abraham, I'm sorry. His daddy
you know, set a bad example. Thank you, Don. His daddy set a bad example for him, okay? And so what was it, you know? And as you said, Romans chapter 1, man, it's like you just can't put your head down on your pillow at night and say, you know, here's creation. There's got to be a creator. There's got to be a God, you know? But yet at the same time, Mike, as we've been looking, you know, God has been from one generation to the next been revealing this plan, okay? He's got a plan. I know he's got a plan. And I'm sticking to it, okay? And if y'all want to go off the reservation and do what you want, that's you. But I'm following the script. That's a good point. You had a comment. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, with people like Noah, you know, it says that he walked with God. So he had that assurance, you know, straight from the source.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it still takes great faith to go off of.
Amanda, think of this. How hard was it? Listen, what was going on around him, though?
Yeah.
Was the rest of the world walking that way? Half of the world? Three-fourths of the world?
None. Chaos.
None. That's exactly right, you know? I mean, really try to put yourself in that position and say, wow, that's great faith. You know, and he was a preacher of righteousness. You know, that's what the scriptures tell us. No one's listening except his own family, you know? Man, he's doing good to get that, you know? Because I don't even get that half the time. I digress. Soap opera time.
600 years.
Yes. Very good. So, you know, but you're right. You know, what great faith, you know, to still yet hang in there and say, God said it, I know it's true, and I'm doing it, you know? All right. Lloyd.
You know, if all we have to do is go through the scriptures and see all the examples of word of faith.
Yes.
And if you can't gather that, then you're dead.
What was the common link there, Lloyd, with faith? Was it, in other words, with all these people in faith, was it just, yep, I believe, and that's it? There were works. Thank you. There was works, okay? It's not enough to just say, yeah, I believe it, and then go off and not live it, right? Believing is living. Faith is living. Okay? All right. So let's motor through this. So Exodus chapter 1, verses 6 through 7. Joseph and all of his brethren and all his generation died. Here's a turning point. But the Israelites were fruitful. They multiplied greatly, and they became exceedingly numerous, so that the land was filled with them. And this new Pharaoh, this new sheriff in town, was just so tickled about that. Right? Because I can collect more revenue, I can get more taxes, and you know what? And we can all work together and build Egypt up and just, you know, have a coke and a smile and sing kumbaya. Is that what we can do? No. What was his feeling? And there's a lot of this I'm going to miss as far as reading a bunch of my notes, but I'm at the point now, I'm in ablib gear, and we're going to go through this. But I'm relying on you. So this new Pharaoh, tell me about him. How does he feel about this?
Foreigners.
Okay, they're foreigners, okay?
Thought they might take over.
They're about to take over.
He's worried,
isn't he? Okay, what if, you know, my enemy comes against me and these guys side with the enemy, and then he goes on and he says, and then they just up and leave. You know, we're going to be left in shambles. What great idea did he come up with? You remember what he started doing? Remember what he did?
Yeah. Put taskmasters over.
You know, I'm going to make your life hard. I'm going to make your life very, very difficult, okay? Start with holding straw, you know, from the mortar that you're, the bricks that you're building. You know, I'm just going to make things difficult. And I want big cities. I don't want little cities. I want big cities, you know? I want to make a name for myself. So, you know, they used to go to it, and he thought maybe if I tucker them out, I mean, maybe they'll want to sleep instead of have babies. I'm kind of reading that in there, folks. You know, he's working them hard, right? Seriously. So, did that work?
No.
Okay.
More and more babies.
More and more babies. Pua and Shifra. Okay, didn't make those names up there in there. Okay, the midwives. Okay, Pharaoh went to them and said, as soon as the babies are born, I want you to kill them. Okay, kill them. You know, I love the passage there where it says they fear God and obey God rather than Pharaoh. That's powerful. Don't let that get past you. Okay. So, well, If that's not going to work, then when these babies are born, now keep the females alive. You know, but when these babies are born, you know, these male babies, I want you to put them in these, just throw them in the Nile. Throw them in the Nile. One baby in particular. Who is he?
Moses.
Baby Moses. All right. Baby Moses is put in this little basket, and he's sent down the Nile. And I think it was all planned. I really do. Okay? So Miriam happens to be there, and here comes the Pharaoh's daughter, and like all women do when a new baby's brought into a presence of an assembly, oh, he's so cute, oh, and her hearts just melt, you know? She's no different, and that's what happened. Miriam's like, should I go find his mother? And she can nurse him because she's already made up her mind. She's going to take this baby in as her own. Okay? Yes, you do that. And look at the scriptures closely, and I will pay you your wages. That's, guys, that's awesome. You know? I love it. You know, when God says this, and oh, by the way, you're paying for it. you're gonna finance this. Okay? So, you know the rest of the story. You know, Moses grows up. He grows up as a very family member in Pharaoh's court. He's educated. He's educated with princes. Okay? He knows the Egyptian lifestyle inside and out. Somewhere in Moses' life, somewhere in Moses' life, he obviously knows. He's learned. I'm not one of them. I'm a Hebrew. You know, one of the passages, we got to go back and read this. Go back to Hebrews chapter 11, and I want us to see this. Hebrews chapter 11, someone read verses 23 through 29. Hebrews 11, 23 through 29. We got to roll with it, though. Someone's got it. Go ahead and read it. Hebrews 11, 23 through 29. Who's got it? Okay, go ahead.
By faith, Moses, when he was born, with his 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandments. By faith, Moses, when he was some 2 years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction from the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season.
Listen to me. When we talk about, now, Mike had a good point earlier, okay, with regards to where did they get this faith. This is one of those passages. You can read over this and not really grasp the full meaning of it if you're just reading it too fast. Before we see Moses' faith, whose faith do we see? Look at it. He didn't put himself in the basket, folks. Okay? His parents. We see the faith of his parents. That's hardly ever discussed. And all the lessons I've ever heard preached and teached and taught, okay, I never have come across anyone who says, look at his parents. Look at their faith. You know, we got these Bible characters that we put up here, but they had faith in God, that God had a plan. God has a way. Okay? And God's going to rescue him. I just know it. And he did. Okay? He did. And they did not, again, fear Pharaoh, did they? That's a common theme, too. We've already discussed it with the midwives. You don't scare us, Pharaoh. You know? We revere, respect God. Okay? So going through this with regards to, I got to make sure I get my slides correct here because I don't want to talk so much. It's like, oh, man, I was supposed to point out something like that. So, but anyway. So we go through this, guys, and we're looking at, let's just go through this. So the oppression in Egypt, they're oppressed. Okay? Pharaoh's making life miserable for them. Moses is... He is found killing an Egyptian taskmaster. What does he do to him? Tries to bury him. Okay. No one saw anything. It's all good. Sees two Hebrews fighting later. What happens? Tries to break up the fight. Just trying to be a good guy here. Okay? And one of them says, you going to do to us what you did to that Egyptian the other day? Excuse me?
Uh-oh.
Packs things up. Says, I'm out of here. Okay, Pharaoh's going to have my head. Okay, he goes to Midian. Okay, marries Zipporah, has a child. He's there for 40 years. He is near Horeb, Mount Sinai. And what is it that he sees? That was just bizarre. What was it, Reba?
The bush that was burning, but was not consumed.
Not consumed. The burning bush, but it wasn't consumed. Who's the bush is talking to him. Who's talking to him?
God.
God is having a conversation. What does God want Moses to do? Okay, first thing was take your shoes off. You're right, I heard that over there. But he wants him to go back. And what, Reba? What do you want him to do? Yes, you're the deliverer. Moses the deliverer. You're going to deliver. And Moses is like, here am I, God, send me. Yeah. Is that what he said? No. He starts making excuses, doesn't he?
Somebody else.
Yeah. I'm not a good speaker. You know, can you see this? He's playing stall ball. And who's going to say, send me? God says, I am who I am. Send you. Now, when you go back and you look at the Hebrew, and I am has sent you, and you look at that, that is talking about, and this is why the Hebrews could understand this. I've always been, I always will be, and I am now. That's what they got. Oh, you're God. God's giving us a message. He goes back. Okay? He meets up with Aaron. Aaron meets up with him. They discuss what God has said. Okay? Because I need an interpreter. Okay? If you don't feel like you're man enough to go ahead and speak, God's already taken care of that for you. So Aaron's involved in this. So he goes back and he has a meeting with there's a new sheriff in town. Okay? There's a new Pharaoh. Okay? But he comes back after the one with Joseph. Okay? So he comes back and he is going to try to convince Pharaoh to let God's people go, to go out to the wilderness, 3-day journey, and worship God. Okay? So he goes back. He's got a staff. What happens to the staff? Throws down on the ground, what happens? Turns into a snake. Okay. All right. God and I would have had a conversation at this point. You know, can it, like, be a koala bear or something like that? I don't know. You know, because I hate snakes. I throw it down and run. You know. But anyway, so he throws it down, and the magicians, Pharaoh's magicians, what do? They have their little snake. And they throw theirs down. But what happens? They get all swallowed up, don't they? My God's bigger than your God. My God's bigger than your God. You know, didn't do that, but I'm just kind of saying. You know, so, you know, then we go from that point to trying to convince them. Then, guys, we move on to the plagues. Okay? Moses trying to convince them through the plagues. So we have these plagues, and how many of them were there?
Yeah.
Okay, there were 10 plagues. First plague is the water turns into blood. Okay? Go down the line. Stretch out, and you know, stretch out your little staff there, and there's going to be blood everywhere. Oh, by the way, all the little ponds, everything, there's blood everywhere. Okay? This is something that Pharaoh, and I know this question's coming, you know, with regards to his magicians being able to be involved into performing some trickery as well. Okay? Not that God did or Moses did, but they were able to convince Pharaoh, we can do that. We can do that. That only lasts for a short time. Okay? But because of that, we get into this, and I'm going to throw this out there. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this tonight. We can talk about it after class. Did God harden Pharaoh's heart and take away his free will? Or did Pharaoh harden his own heart and that doesn't really mean anything? Okay. The scriptures say both, doesn't it? The scriptures say that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. The scriptures also say that Pharaoh hardened, his own heart was hardened. Okay? How do we make these jive? How does this jive? It jives, at least in my mind, this way. Okay? Number one, if we see God taking away free will, then this is the only time in scriptures we actually see that. God is taking away someone's free will. Okay? That's not consistent. That's not consistent with God. That's not consistent with mankind. Okay? So, that can't be it. In what way can God be hardening my heart? God can be hardening my heart, Archie, when I choose to not listen to what God says.
Whenever we oppose God's will, we
harden our own heart. That's it. In that respect, that is how God is having some blame, if you would, in hardening hearts. is the fact that God is saying something. God is telling me to do something, and I'm choosing to not do it. Okay? But Pharaoh had a choice, okay, through this whole thing. So we run through these plagues. You guys know the plagues well. One of the plagues in particular I think is interesting. It's kind of comical, actually, whenever you go back. I told you earlier about the magicians and what was going on here. Look, if you would, in Exodus. I want to run over to Exodus. And I want to see one of the plagues with regards to maybe the frogs in Exodus in chapter 8. Yes. Hey, let's look at verse 18, guys. This is kind of fun. Now the magicians so worked with their enchantments to bring forth lice, but they could not. So there were lice on man and beast. Then the magician said to Pharaoh, get this, this is the finger of God. We're done. That's what they're saying. You know, we can't duplicate this. This is God. God's telling you something. Their God is showing you something. You best listen to him. Does Pharaoh listen to him after we see all the various plagues? We don't see it, do we? We don't see him, you know, saying during the frogs, the lice, the pestilence that destroy most of the livestock, the boils, the hail, the locusts. And that after the hail came down, it destroyed all their vegetation, you know. And all of a sudden, here come the locusts. Hey, maybe we can at least scrimp up something. And here come the locusts. You see what God's doing to them? Okay. So the locusts come by. They want to go ahead and clean everything up. Okay. The darkness. Okay. That's on the earth. And then finally, the final blow. The death of what?
Firstborn.
The death of the firstborn. That was enough for Pharaoh to say, you know what, go. Or was it? He had a change of heart later, wasn't he? His pride. So full of pride. Finally, that's the Israelites go, guys. They go out, Exodus chapter 12, after that 10th and final plague. What are some things we learn here as they make their way out into the wilderness and they begin to worship God? Well, we begin to see a very monumental feast is established. What was it?
Passover.
Passover is established. Okay? Passover is established. Okay? The Hebrews were to take the blood of a lamb, spread that blood up along the doorpost, around the top, and when the Lord came through the camp, what was that a sign
to God?
Passover. Hey, there's some imagery for you, right? There's some imagery for you. Okay. So the Israelites are in the wilderness and they're worshiping God. Things are going to get a little tough because the next time that we read and we look at this, we're going to be looking at the Exodus. That's the next period. Now, we're talking about obviously, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Okay? And what we're going to do the next time we're together, we're not going to read all those books. Okay? We're just going to pick out some highlights and some of those books and piece it together. Okay? But with this, when we're talking about God revealing his plan to us, on your chart, go ahead and you put Moses up there. And the very story that we shared tonight about Moses and Moses' faith. And tell the story of Moses. The very story that you helped me out with tonight. You can share that story with anybody. You know it. Okay? God's plan to redeem man in the Egyptian period. If we're looking at some passages, some images, one of them I think would have to be this. In Genesis 49, verse 10, this is indeed a messianic prophecy. Again, what is a messianic prophecy? What is a messianic prophecy? Tells of Christ coming, doesn't it, Mike? Okay? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and unto him
shall be the obedience of all people. Scepter represents authority. There's a scepter. Okay? One who is in authority. Kings had these. Okay? All right? Moses went with a staff, kind of like a scepter. Okay? Lawgiver. What does the lawgiver do?
Rules.
He rules. Okay? He imparts law. Right? He is one in authority. He imparts law. Wait, who's that sound like? I don't know. Let's see here. Shiloh. In Hebrew, means him to whom it belongs. Go back. Someone read Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 through 2. And someone else read Matthew chapter 2, verses 5 through 6. Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 through 2. Who's got that? Matthew 1. Brian, go ahead.
The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac begot Jacob. And Jacob begot Judah and his brothers.
That's interesting. There's 12 brothers. Who's mentioned?
Judah's mentioned. Judah's mentioned. That's not by accident. Okay? That's not by accident. Because we're all pointing to one man. Who's the man we're eventually going to arrive at? Jesus Christ, right? Okay. Look at Matthew chapter 2, verses 5 through 6. Who's got Matthew 2, verses 5 through 6? Austin.
They told him in Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.
Wow. Out of you is going to come a ruler. And you're going to shepherd the people of Israel. As a matter of fact, all people will be saved through Jesus Christ, right? So this is a passage. Now, another one, guys, that you might want to look to with regards to if we're talking about passages with regards to images and what have you. Again, the Passover lamb was connected with that 10th plague in Egypt. And 1 Corinthians in chapter 5, verse 7. Someone read that. 1 Corinthians 5, 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7. And keep in mind the 10th plague, and keep in mind the Passover, and what does Paul say in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7? Who's got it?
Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed Christ, our Passover, sacrifice.
Who's our Passover? Jesus is our Passover. Right. You know, God is taking these images and these specific passages and reminding us he's coming. Jesus is coming. And that gives weight to what Peter was talking about, guys, with regards to he's been...
We got kids.
That he's been prophesied, and the angels desire to look into these things, okay, for centuries. All right, we're done. Thank you for your time and your attention. I appreciate it. Thank you.